Thank you, Barrios Bob.
Okay. We had a request to dedicate the shir to a refuah shlema to Esther Basrus and to
Gittel Bat.
I don't know who's on
that. Gittel Batya.
Gittel Bas Batya.
Good memory.
And for all the
I just heard this yesterday, so it's not that great.
And for all the cholim, we just had a new tillim list for them. All the cholim.
Right.
We are up to Perek Bet.
Yeah,
Perek Bet. Perek Aleph was the notice of the death of Shaul and his sons, and Kinat David. So we finished the story, the analysis of the Kina, and now the story begins to unfold.
Is this the only quote Kina of David, or does he have other Kina? Or is this the Kina?
This is Kinat David. When, like, wherever it's used in Israeli ceremonies, etc., this is it. This is what we're referred to as Kinat David.
Can you think of any other Kina?
I don't think so. I mean, I'd have to look up in anywhere else, but there's certainly nothing in Shmuel, and Tehillim are all Tehillim or Tehillot, so I don't believe there's anything else called Kinat David. Perek Bet. Vahi Achre Chen. וישאל דוד בהשם לאמור, האלה באחת ערי יהודה? ויאמר השם אליו, עלה. ויאמר דוד, ענה אלה? ויאמר, חברונה. After these things of course referring to
the death
of Shaul and the sort of the transition, the moment, critical moment of what happens next. So David, who always, before any critical moment decision, whether it be war, whether it be a battle, this battle or the other, David, who always seeks out advice from God in the manner of the Umber Tumim.
That's an important call that I have to leave.
No problem. So he seeks Vayomer David Bahashem, Vayishal David Bahashem. To ask God means to seek from the Urim V'Tumim some counsel. And the question that he asks is, Ha'e'le ba'achat Yehuda, should I go up to one of the cities of Judah? What does to go up mean in this case? Doesn't mean to physically move to a new location, right? La'alot, in this context, means what?
Oh, yeah?
No.
Jerusalem being
high? Jerusalem's not in the equation yet.
Oh, okay.
It's not even a factor, and number two, the answer is Chevron. But what does it mean, la'alot?
To make a pilgrimage?
No.
Maybe he's getting up from Sing Shiva?
No. much more dramatic.
Okay.
Much more dramatic. La'alot in this context means to rise to the throne. Should I assume the throne?
He just died.
Correct. This is there is an opening, there's a vacancy, there's a leadership vacuum, right? This is the critical moment. Do I ascend the throne?
Ha'e'eleh. It's an interesting word.
Do I ascend the throne in one of the cities of Judah? And God says to him, Aleh. Yes. Time to ascend
and
the throne.
He's talking directly to Hashem.
He's talking through the Urim V'Tumim. Yes. Anytime David is not a Navi. Anytime we talk about Vayishal Hashem, to seek or to ask of God, it's always in David's context, always through the mechanism of the Urim V'Tumim.
Not like Moshe.
No. He's not a Navi. David is not a Navi.
Okay.
Vayishal David Hashem Lamor Ha'aleh Be'achat Yehuda. Do I ascend the throne in one of the cities of Judah? Vayomer Hashem Elav, God answered him, Ale, yes, time to ascend the throne. Vayomer David, Ana Ele, where should I ascend the throne? Vayomer, God answered, Chevrona, city of Chevron, which of course is the capital of the city, the tribe of Judah. Vayal Sham David Vagam Shtena Shav Achinoam Yisraelit Vavigail Eshet Navala Karmali. He goes up to the city of Hebron together with his wives Achinoam Yisraelit and Avigail Eshet Navala Karmali. We talked about the fact of why She's always referred to as Eshet Naval, even though she's David's wife. Va'anashav asher imo he'ela David ish uveto, took his entire family, the entire entourage, all of his people, and he brought them up to with him. Va'yeshvu ba'arei Chevron, and there they sat, they dwelt, they settled in the city of Chevron. Va'yavo anshe Yehuda va'yimshechu sham et David lemelech al Beit Yehuda. People of Judah come and they anoint David as the new king of the house of Judah. Ve'yagidu leDavid lemor anshe Yavesh Gilad asher kavru et Shaul. And at that time, David is now informed for the first time of the events of the burial of Shaul in Givat by the people of Yavesh Gilad. What happens next is a little bit of a story with Yavesh Gilad, and then there's another story. But I want to come back to this conversation first. Let's talk about this today. Right. David ascends the throne. So first of all, there's a play on the word la'alot, to go up. Right. There's two applications of the word ole in this passage. One is to ascend the throne, and the other is to
make a pilgrimage.
Right. Not a pilgrimage.
Oh.
Just to go to Hebron.
Right, to go to Hebron. Right? Hebron is a mountain, is on a mountain. Hebron is there. You go up to Hebron. In general, when you move to a city, you go up to that city. Right? There's a kind of a general attitude. But certainly, and you see the two applications of the same word. Ha'ale b'chat Rei Yehuda, should I ascend to one of the cities of Judah, which in his case is a reference to ascending the throne. But then there's also Vaya'al Sham David, he goes up there to settle with his family. If you actually look at the language of the text, of these, literally these three psukim, okay, in three psukim, the root ole, ayin lamed he, is used five times. Vayishal David b'Hashem l'mor ha'ele b'achat b'Yehuda, v'yomer Hashem elav ale, v'yomer David ana e'ele, v'yomer chevrona, v'ya'al sham David v'gam shten ashav, etc., v'anashav asher imo he'ela David ish uveto v'yeshu b'arei Chevron. So clearly the reference here, or the notion here, the emphasis here, is on the aliyah of David, both physically to the city of Chevron, as well as the status
promotion
of David to the king, to the role of officially the role of king, but in this case king over Beit Yehuda, because of course we're not ready yet for him to ascend the throne of all of Israel. That'll take some doing and it'll take some time. But the step one is to be recognized as the king, as an official king of Beit Yehuda. Now, one of the questions that the... I'm just trying to think whether I should read through the whole section first and then come back. No, let's stop it here. One of the questions that that seems to get sort of discussed in the Midrashim and the Mefarshim is the mechanism by which one seeks the counsel of the Urim V'Tumim. This is not the first time we've encountered it. We had it back in Sefer Shoftim. We had it a few times in Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Okay. David is, perhaps more than almost any other king, David is known for, you know, every time before he goes into battle, he seeks that counsel, Vayishal b'Hashem, to seek God's counsel, either through the Navi, but more often the case, through the Kohen Gadol's breastplate of the Urim V'Tumim. Typically, the questions are very specific, right? Yes, no type of questions, or kind of roundabout questions that can be answered in a manner. Remember, the mechanism for the Urim V'Tumim is that the breast, it had the names of all the Shvatim and stones representing the Shvatim, and kind of some kind of mechanism that illuminated physically and otherwise the answer to the questions. The question here is why David asks the question twice. Right? Why does he ask two questions? What are the two questions?
Should I and where should I?
Right. Should I and where? Ha'ale be'achat ha'yuda? And God said, yes, ale. Why doesn't he just ask the question once? Right? Should I go into one of the cities of Judah? Where should I go? Answer, Ale lechevron. Well, why essentially define, why take this question in two stages? It seems to be redundant, or even the first question is kind of like...
But it isn't, because if he said, should I ascend the throne, and Hashem says no, then
doesn't
you don't need the second question.
True.
Where would I go if I was going
to be? Right. So then let's start with the first question. So what is the significance of Ha'ale Be'achat Be'yuda? Like, why is that even a question? Like, why does he answer the question, why does it matter which city altogether? Like, that's also an issue. Like, well,
yeah,
who cares
he's
what city?
To go somewhere, he needs to right. know where he's going.
You can go anywhere. Right? You can go anywhere, really.
But why
to Hebron? Right? Why Hebron? You can go anywhere. What difference does it make? He chooses his own capital. When he goes to Yerushalayim, he doesn't ask God whether he should go to Yerushalayim. He just goes.
Didn't somebody tell him to go to Yerushalayim?
No.
Okay.
No. Jesus to go to Yerushalayim. We will study the whole battle and the whole conquest of Yerushalayim and why, but that'll come much later in chapter 5. But there's no Umar Batumim involvement there. What's the dynamic of these two questions? Should I ascend the throne? What else is he going to do? Not ascend the throne? I mean, this is the death of Saul. He's been promised a king. He's been told he's going to be king. He's been playing the role of king. He's been the general and the leader. The moment is there. Why wouldn't he ascend the throne?
Isn't there still some survivors from Saul's family?
They're not players yet. They will become players in a little bit, but they're not yet players.
Well, maybe he doesn't want to be presumptuous.
Maybe.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know if it's an issue of this. I mean,
that's a good point.
He doesn't even know about the story of Yavesh Gilad of the Plishtim. I can't see it as a function of his burial. I think it's much more a function of the civil war between Binyamin and Yehuda. There has been for the last who knows how many years a very deep rift between Binyamin and Yehuda. Shaul from Binyamin, David from Yehuda, but the division between Binyamin and Yehuda is far deeper than David and Shaul. Far deeper. The rift between Yehuda in the south and the north and the tribes north, Binyamin and north, is a rift that goes all the way back to Sefer Yehoshua and Shoftim. So we're talking about a rift that's from the day we walked into the land of Israel.
So Pelegesh from Begiv?
Pelegesh Begiv is one of those places where you see it, but there was a attack of all the tribes against Binyamin. Okay. That's less of an issue. But you had it certainly much earlier. You had an issue at Devorah, where we talked about it right at the very beginning of the period of the Shoftim, when Devorah has this whole song about all the tribes and who she. Devorah is coming from the north, right? Kadesh and Emek Israel, and she has a whole discussion about the tribes of Israel, which tribes do come and fight, which tribes don't come and fight, where they participate, where they don't. And Shevet Yehuda is not on the equation. She, in all of Shirat Devorah, she mentions every tribe except for Shevet Yehuda. And we tried to offer various explanations as to why Shevet Yehuda was not mentioned. Most likely plausible theory is that Shevet Yehuda was just busy. It just wasn't expected to come. This was a matter relevant to Emek Israel, relevant to the northern tribes. Northern tribes never really engaged with Yehuda. Yehuda's in the south and totally independent of the rest of the tribes. And you get that sense that there's a constant division between Shevet Yehuda in the south and the rest of the tribes in the north. There's a reference, I believe, in Shmuel Aleph, I think, in early by Perek Yud Aleph, where they gather together the army of Israel to go to fight. That's Perek Yud Aleph is the war against Yavesh Gilad. Shaul gathers all the forces together, and the accounting of the battle there, the army is defined as Vayifkedem beBazek Vayu Bnei Yisrael Shlosh Milot Elef VeIsh Yudah Shloshim Aleph. Bnei Yisrael accounted for an army of 300,000. Ish Yehuda counted for an army of 30,000. Why would you split them?
Because they were separate.
Because they're always separate. Yehuda and the rest of Bnei Yisrael were always separate. From the day they walked into the land of Israel, there was a separation between Yehuda in the south and all the other tribes in the north. Remember, geographically, everything from Yerushalayim south is Shevet Yehuda. Everything from the Yerushalayim north is everybody else. And if you think about the map of Israel, Shevet Yehuda is exposed to essentially two major threats militarily. One from the Plishtim, Eretz Plishtim in the west, and the other is Amalek in the south. And the Plishtim and Amalek are particularly a threat to Yehuda. That's why David HaMelech, when he's traveling through Shevet Yehuda, is constantly raiding Amalek in the south and protecting the Yeshuvim and the border of Yehuda. Yehuda is exposed on two borders. South to Amalek and west to the Plishtim. Everybody else in the north, more or less, is sitting pretty and safe. From Binyamin on northward, unless the Plishtim are mounting an incursion northward, more or less, the only threats to the northern tribes are either from the very far north, Sidon, Lebanon area, or from the very far east, Ammon Moab, which are not really major threats. So Yehuda's constantly dealing with and struggling with the battles and the skirmishes and the raiding, marauding armies of Amalek and the Plishtim. Yeah. Shaul and the rest of the army, they're all up north, they're dealing with their own stuff. To the few moments when Shaul is challenged and tasked with fighting Amalek in the south, which he doesn't do properly, or fighting the Plishtim in the west, which he doesn't do properly. But more or less, you're dealing with Shevet Yehuda and their constant focus with the Plishtim and Amalek, and all the rest of the tribes that go about their business. This is a very old rift between Yehuda and the rest of the tribes. Part of it is that Yehuda kind of gets isolated geographically, and the other tribes kind of don't engage with them. They don't come to protect. They're literally focused separately. Yehuda does focus out, and the rest of the tribes are focused north and east. Potentially an earlier component, or a more spiritual, if you will, context of this in Sefer Bereishit, but really in Sefer Yehoshua Shoftim, and it's a much more geopolitical concern, that Shevet Yehuda is its own operation. They have to deal with their own challenges. They have their own enemies in the south that nobody else is going to help them with. Shaul certainly couldn't care less about the Plishtim or the Amalek. Certainly never bothered with them. Never came to the aid of Yehuda for all those years. And during the latter years, committed most, because he didn't, because none of the tribes did that. You know, Yehuda's in the south. They'll deal with their own problems. It's just the rift between Yehuda and the rest of the tribes is very early. You see it in Shaul, you see it in Shoftim, this constant Yisrael v'Yehuda. Yisrael v'Yehuda, two different worlds. We're used to thinking of the split of the kingdom in terms of Malchut Yisrael and Malchut Yehuda, which is much later. But we're also used to thinking of Malchut Yehuda as two tribes, and the northern kingdom as 10 tribes, right? That's why there's that. And when that split happens many years later, in the time of the after Shlomo, the split happens north of Binyamin. Binyamin stays with Yehuda. It's a long way to get to that shift in the world view of the tribes. But for all of the years from the entry into the land of Israel, the rift is between Yehuda in the south and Binyamin in the north. Binyamin and everybody else. So that, I mean, you see it most acutely in Shirat Devorah, because in Shirat Devorah she talks about that. There's the battle in Emek Yisrael, and she's expecting all the tribes to come and fight. And those who come and fight, she praises, and those who don't come, she criticizes. And she doesn't spare her whip from anybody. And her assessment of Shevet Yehuda is simply non-existent, because Shevet Yehuda doesn't appear in her Shira. Like, there's no reference to Yehuda at all. And she mentions every other tribe by name, every single one. She does not mention Yehuda at all. Not positive, not negative. ostensibly because she wasn't expecting Yehuda to come. Either because they're too busy down in the south, or because of the same way that the northern tribes never went to assist in the south, so the south knew they never came to the north. It was just two different worlds. So the notion somehow that Binyamin, the king of that Shaul from Binyamin is going to become this unifying factor over all of Israel, one king over the entire people, right, which is sort of the aftermath of the story of Pelegish Begiver. That's how it all started. Pelegish Begiver was this great civil war, almost eradicated Binyamin, of Dafka of all tribes, right? So Shaul from the tribe of Binyamin becomes the king, and now his task is to unify all the tribes of Israel. Well, it almost worked, except that he neglects you, and he neglects you initially because of the geography, but more importantly because David is from Yehuda. So he has this constant challenge with you. Like he's kind of ambivalent almost to you. And the plight, how many times is David out there literally risking his life to protect the tribes of Judah, the southern flank of the tribes of Judah, exposed to the marauding armies of Amalek and the Plishtim, and there is David fighting, and where's Shaul? Where are the armies of Shaul for all those years that David is protecting the Yishuvim in the south? Nowhere. He's nowhere. He's committed his army to a search and destroy mission to find David. And the rest of the tribes are just, you know, doing gong about their business. Until the Plishtim decide to launch an incursion against Binyamin and against Shaul, and suddenly Shaul is in trouble. But Shevet Yehudah has always been separated from the rest of the tribes. And so when that moment comes, Shaul dies, and there is a moment or a vacuum in the leadership of Israel, the question now that gets raised for David is, what's my next move? Is my next move to ascend the throne or not? Do I wait it out? Do I see what happens? Do I wait for the what do I do next? It's a critical, critical moment. And the answer, the question was that's formulated is, Ale be'achat arei Yehuda. Do I ascend the throne, but specifically in one of the cities of the Shevet Yehuda? In other words, at this point, I don't think there's even there's not even a havamina, there's not even a contemplation of a possibility that David would ascend a more national throne. That's not even the realm of an option. The only question at this point is, do I ascend the throne? Do I take advantage of this critical moment, which has potential challenges? Because if the rest of the tribes of Israel don't see that, or don't recognize David, then you end up perpetuating this conflict between Yehudah and Benjamin, a conflict which has been a civil war through all the years of Shaul and Benjamin and David. It's a critical question. Do you ascend the throne and stake your territory and see what happens? Or do I hold off, wait it out, and see what happens then? And to that question, the answer that Rabban Shalom gives him is Ale. It's time to fulfill that mandate and ascend the throne.
Why Hebron so significant when he said it to Hebron also. That was significant.
Well, we'll come to Hebron in a second. It's time to ascend the throne. Right? He's de facto been the king of Shevet Yehudah. Right? De facto, he's played that role. He's fought battles. He's led his army. He's divided up the spoils of war amongst all the cities in the region. He's go back to the story of Naval of Carmeli, right? The whole issue where he's expecting payment, and if you challenge his authority, right? There's a price to pay. Naval, who challenges his authority, comes out with his whole army, and Abigail has to stop him. Right? David has been playing the role of leader, at least militarily, up until this point. He's been de facto the leader of Shevet Yehudah. Now the question is this the time to transform that de facto role into an official role? Ha'ale bechat Abayuda. To which the answer is yes. Where? That's question two. Where is no less significant a question, but it's question two. Why is where a significant question? Where else would you go? Chetron is the capital city of Judah. Where else are you going to go to ascend the throne? Why does he even have to ask?
The
Chemish is not clearly in Shevet Yehuda.
The early stories in Shoftim about, you know, where the...
Shoftim, I'm not sure you want to go back that far. That's a long way to go back. Where? What are the options for David? Chevron is an option. What are the other options? What are the logical options? If it's not Chevron, then where would it be?
Shiloh?
Nope. Sheila's in the Ephraim. Okay, Sheila's way up north. Sheila's way up north in the Ephraim. What? Bethlehem, possibly, except that Bethlehem, his hometown is Bethlehem. He comes from Bethlehem. Is there anybody left in Bethlehem? First of all, Bethlehem is a nothing of a town. And second of all,
how do we know that?
You know, any story in Bethlehem other than the fact that David comes from Bethlehem?
That's very rude.
Yeah. 300 years, 100 and something years earlier.
It's the same lineage.
Bethlehem isn't an option.
No, Jerusalem's not in the equation. Okay, it's not in Shevet Yehuda. The Shevet Yehuda, you've got Bethlehem as an option, but you also have a much more significant role. Beit Shemesh is not necessarily in Yehuda either. Beit Shemesh is on the coast. Go back to Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed.
Can
you
see a map?
So the map's not going to have all the
things. You're going back to Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed. You're going to find out there.
Okay. I like to see if she's visual.
I'm a geographer. I like to see a map.
Here's your map. Shevet Yehuda is essentially everything from Yerushalayim southward, more or less, is Shevet Yehuda. This is a later map. This isn't the map that's relevant to this time period. It's much later. But
does it go all the way to Beersheva or no?
More or less goes down to Beersheva. But remember, there's a bunch of cities belonging to Shevet Shimon in this region, too, because Shevet Shimon is given five cities inside Shevet Yehuda. That's a Yehoshua issue. But this is more or less the region that we're talking about. This is Gat and Ashkelon, the two cities he mentions in the Kina, which are Philistine cities.
Yeah.
And so this is more or less your area, Devir, Arad, the Hebron, Beersheva. These are the border cities around here. Tziklag is down here that he's been operating in. And if you take a look at the end of Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed, after the story of Naval Karmel, after the story of Tziklag and the battle with Amalek, which is really the first time he kind of really eradicates Amalek for all intents and purposes as an existential threat.
Tziklag.
After the Battle of Tziklag,
Pasuk. Was Tziklag Plishtim, or was it?
Tziklag is what the city, the Plishti city that he gave to David, to settle him. Right, Tziklag is the city that. Vayavod David el Tziklag, he comes home to Tziklag. Vayishalach, I'm the end of Perek Lamed, Pasuk Chavav. Vayishalach me'ashalal luziknei Yehuda le'ayu lemor, and he sends the spoils of war that he gathered back from Shmuel Aleph Perek Lamed Pasuk Chaf Vav. And he sends the spoils of war to all of his chevra, all of his pals in Ziknei Yehuda L'Re'eu, all of the people of Judah, leaders of Yehuda, to his friends, and he says to them, Hine lachem bracha mishlal oyvei Hashem. You all get a portion of the spoils of this battle against Amalek. And he sends them out. L'asher b'veit el, v'asher b'ramot negev, v'asher b'yatir, v'asher b'aroer, v'asher b'shifmot, v'asher b'eshtemoa, v'asher b'rachav, v'asher b'arayar yirach me'eli, v'asher b'arayar keni, v'asher b'chorma, v'asher b'chor ashan, v'asher b'atach, v'asher b'chevron, u'lechol ha'mekomot asher italech sham David uv'anashav. Here's a whole description of the region in which David operated. And to all of the people in the region where David operated, he sent spoils of war. All of these places are essentially lists of cities in the southern ridge, more or less, of Shevet Yehuda. All the way up to Hebron, but really much more, much south, much further south. Arad, Devir, Sheva, here is the Negev. The region of Shevet Yehuda in the south, we call the Negev, in Sefer Shmuel is described by regions referred to as Negev X, Negev Y, meaning they're identified as parts of the Negev or ridges within the Negev that are identified. There are essentially five regions in the Negev of Shevet Yehuda. Negev simply means south. But there are five regions within that area that are referred to as Negev.
Well, it mentions Beit El. Is that in Yehuda?
That's in Yehuda. That's a different Beit El than we are.
Oh.
Beit El that we talk about is in Binyamin, but the Beit El of Yehuda that we're talking about
is... Yaakov has his dreams.
No. That's a Beit El together. Take a look, for example, in Pasuk.
That was our question. Beit El and Machanaim the same thing?
Yeah.
Machanaim is in the east side of the Yarden. Machanaim is on the Yabok River. Machanaim's over here.
Okay.
Beit El is lots of different there. Places called Beit El, like Beit Lechem. There are billion Beit Lechems in the land of Israel. There's a billion.
He's trying to figure out if Yaakov stopped in the same place going and coming.
No, not at all. Not a chance. We'll talk about Machanaim, but not yet. Take a look at. Beginning of this parak, parak lamed, same parak that we're in, that we just looked at, parak lamed, pasuk yud dalid. When he catches up to Amalek and he asks Amalek, where did they? He captures that eved. Remember when he encounters, he's pursuing, right? The guy was left on the way. So he asks him, where were you today? Pasuk yud dalid. Anachnu. So this this eved is describing what Amalek had done. Anachnu pashatnu negev hakreti v'al asher liyuda v'al negev kalev v'etzik lag sarafnu. So we attacked the region of negev hakreti, negev kalev, Nevala Karmali, Kalibi, negev kalev. You have also a reference earlier in Perek of Zion. Pasuk Yud. When Achish asks David, where did David raid? What areas did David raid? Thinking that he was attacking Judean cities, when in fact he was attacking Amalek. So David says to Achish, where did I go? I went. Vayomer Achish al pshatetem ayom. Where did you go to attack? Vayomer David al negev Yehuda v'al negev Yerachmeli v'al negev Akeni. All these regions in the Negev. Negev Yerachmeli, Negev Kini, Negev Yehuda, Negev Kreti, Negev Kalev. These are all regions. Exactly where they are, you'd have to kind of look at maps and it's not unclear, but they're all various regions defined by the topography of the southern ridge of Shevet Yehuda, the area of Shevet Yehuda that's most exposed southward to Amalek and westward to the Plishtim. And more or less, that whole region, what we refer to today as the Negev, more or less, that whole region is where David had spent all of this time developing this band of this army that would help him protect the Yishuvei Yehuda from the marauding armies of Amalek, and protecting the Yishuvim, getting paid by them, getting acknowledged by them. Right? The whole operation of David at the end of Shmuel Aleph is in that region. So, if you had to pick a city in which David would ascend the throne, the logical choice would be somewhere in a city that has been, that David is at home.
So it'd be Negev.
Right? That David would feel at home in. So he's got lots of choices. He's got lots of choices. It's not like he doesn't have any choices. He can go to any one of these cities. any one of the cities of the Negev, Vayivachmeliv, Negev Akini, Negev Yehuda, any one of these places, we'd be happy to have them. Right? And that's the second question. Ana Ele, where do I go? If I ascend the throne in one of these cities where I've been living, where I've been functioning, where I've been operating, then essentially the de facto role of David HaMelech as a kind of the band leader within the south becomes confirmed, and it's an easy ascent to the throne, but it remains local to
his loyal
base, if you will. To ascend to Hebron is the capital of Shevet Yehudah. To ascend to Hebron essentially means what?
That's a national.
Right, not national. He's not going to the north.
Are they acknowledging?
Right. To ascend to Hebron means you become the melech over all of Shevet Yehudah. In other words, you raise the bar of the status. It's like being a king in a region of nomadic existence down in the southern region of Amalek, right? Are you kind of a tribal leader or a national leader? But not quite national in the sense of all of Israel, but national in terms of the Shevet, right? Tribal in terms of much more local bands within the region, right? You've kind of just simple regional powers down there in the south. Or do you take on a much broader Shevet Yehudah, which for all intents and purposes is its own operation, separate from the north, right? Do you ascend the throne of the entire region of Shevet Yehudah? That's the question of location. And so there's two steps to this question. Number one, is it time to ascend the throne? And number two, is it time to ascend the throne and cast that net over all of Shevet Yehudah? It doesn't have a havamina to suggest to cast that net into the north, but certainly over all of Shevet Yehudah. Ana Ele, where do I go? That's the question.
What's a havamina?
What does the word mean?
Yeah.
I translate whenever I use it, but it's a Talmudic term for like contemplated thought.
Huh.
Right. It's just a... What is
it?
It's hard to translate, but I do translate whenever I use it. So, but there's no potential thought to ascend into the north because he doesn't have access there. But within Shevet Yehudah, he's also localized to the southern region where he has been operating. Do you kind of consolidate that base, or do you ascend to a much more much broader constituency and ascend the throne of all of Shevet Yehudah? That's the question, to which the answer is clear. Hebron. David moves to Hebron, and the Navi confirms that choice. Because if you look at the text, immediately after, back to Perek Bet, immediately after he moves there with his wives, Achinomi, Israelit, and Abigail, Naval Karmeli, and all of his people, Va'anashav Asher Imo Elad David Ishufeto, Ve'ishvu Be'arei Hebron. They come and they sit. Notice even it's not Ir Hebron, it's Arei Hebron. Right? It's a region. Ve'yavo Anshe Yehuda, Ve'yimshechu Sham Et David L'melech Al Bet Yehuda. Immediately the recognition by all of Shevet Yehuda. Beit Yehuda, it's no longer just the tribes and the cities in the south. It's all of Anshei Yehuda, the representatives of the Shevet, who come to acknowledge, to anoint David as king over Beit Yehuda. This is already a new stage in David's life. He's no longer regional. He's no longer working with a band of clandestine underground army. He's now a king with an army, with a throne, with a palace. He is there. Until that will expand further, he is now officially king over Shevet Yehudah.
Where was Shaul's palace?
Givat Shaul.
Was it like where he was from, basically?
Yeah, we've seen that before a few times. Yeah. Givat Shaul was his home base. And that's really the transition into the next 7 years. The David 7 years, for us I hope less.
No promises.
Well, I hope one. My goal is to finish up till Perek Zayin this year. We'll see. Pasuk Dalet. Next step. First thing that David hears about when he gets to Hebron is he is informed of the story of Yavesh Gilad coming to bury Shaul. Now, that story, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about that story, but we did mention it, right? Where Yavesh Gilad, they spent all night long. Remember, Yavesh Gilad, let's see if it's on
it's
this
way
map.
Up north now.
Yavesh Gilad is here.
Yeah, on the east side.
Okay. Yavesh Gilad is here. That's where they were exposed to the battle with Ammon that threatened them, and Shaul came to defend them, Perikin
yeah.
Aleph. And Yavesh Gilad, this is, Har Gilboa is not even on this map. It's near here. Tanakh Megiddo. More or less, Har Gilboa is on this area here. Mm-hmm. Is Beit Shan. So, Yavesh Gilad, in a nighttime raid, travel through the night. Remember the psukim in Perek Lamed Aleph? They travel through the night to reach Beit Shan to take the body of Shaul off the wall where it was being
displayed.
Displayed. Yeah. Well, actually, it's possible that they're going all the way down to the Eretz Plishtim. I think actually, even though it says Beit Shan, I don't think it's Beit Shan of Emek Beit Shan. I think it's a city in Eretz Plishtim. Right. They take him all the way down to Eretz Plishtim. V'yasimu et kilav beit ashtarot v'et gviyato taku b'chomat Beit Shan. They put the body, they cut off his head, and they put the head on display in the temples,
yeah.
And the body they threw over the wall of the city. V'yishmu elav yeshvei yevesh gilad et asher asu plishtim l'sha'u v'yakumu kol ish chayil. I'm in the end of Perek Lamed Aleph. V'yakumu kol ish chayil. The warriors of Yavesh Gilad, vayalchu kol halayla, all night long they traveled. Vayakru et gviat Shaul et gviat banav mechomat Beit Shan vayavov Yavesh vayisrafu etam sham. And they took the bodies of Shaul and his sons, and they took them from this wall of Beit Shan, which I think is not Emek Beit Shan, but actually a place down in Eretz Plishtim, because otherwise it wouldn't take all night long to go from here to here. So
okay.
A few kilometers, right? And in the nighttime raid, and then they come back all the way to Yavesh. It's a very daring raid, very daring tactic, but they do so to save the bodies of the dignity of Shaul. They owe a lot to Shaul. They have a great deal of affection and loyalty to Shaul, because it was Shaul, way back when in Perek Yud Aleph, it was Shaul who came to defend Yavesh Gilad from the threat of Melech Bnei Ammon, when nobody else would. It's also Yavesh Gilad and Binyamin who have a long connection back to the story of Pelegish Begiva. Right, so that's same Yavesh Gilad that was attacked by the rest of the tribes in their defense or their choice to remain neutral when all the other tribes went to attack Binyamin and they stayed out of it. They paid the price because the tribes went attacked Yavesh Gilad. Sefer Shoftim, end of Shoftim.
Yeah.
There's a long history of the relationship between Yavesh Gilad and Binyamin, and certainly a loyalty to Shaul for his defense of Yavesh Gilad. And when they heard about what happened to Shaul's body, they're the ones who risked their lives in an all-night raid to go and bury afford Shaul the dignity of Kfurat Yisrael of a proper burial.
But it says they burned them?
Yeah, we may
so
have
we talked about
before,
that. We talked about the burning. Whether it's burning the body or more likely, which is possible that was a form of a dignity for kings at the time, I don't know. Or more likely the reference to the armor and the clothing and the vessels and the whatever have you.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly referred to in the context of an act that was of dignity. ויקחו את עצמותיהם ויקבעו תחת האש וביבשה. They buried the body, the bones, under the tree. Vayatsumu shivat yamim.
And we said that was Shiva.
Correct. Or a potential source for it. So that, back to Perek Bet. David hears about it. Unclear what the expectation of... Right, we don't know who told him. We don't know who came to report to David about the story of Avesh Gilad. It was an all-night secret raid. We have no information. I could guess that whoever came to tell David about... This is not the first time somebody has come to tell David about something related to Shaul.
Does this person survive?
Yeah, well, exactly right. And the last person who came to tell something, to tell him that Shaul died, did so with a smile on his face. And the end result was, David said to him, "I'm going to take that smile off your face, literally, and off the rest of your body too." The later on in Perek Dalet, I think, when he hears of two people who had the audacity to kill Shaul's son in order to and came and told David about it, David also took the smile off their face. We don't know who tells David about Yavesh Gilad. I can imagine that whoever did so came to tell David about it for the same reason that the Na'arah Malachi came to tell David. Right? Shaul was publicly his archenemy. So the more you hear about the death of Shaul, or the burial of Shaul, and the eradication of the threat of Shaul, ostensibly the better in the eyes of most people in the world. But not in the eyes of David. David has a different set of priorities and a different order of values, and so David's response to this news is very different than you would have otherwise expected of somebody who, for whom Shaul was an arch enemy, tried to kill him for all these years. When David hears of the heroic act of the people of Yavesh Gilad to bury Shaul. Right. To bury Shaul, his response was to acknowledge the people of Yavesh Gilad in a very unique way. Vayishlach David malachim el anshei Yavesh Gilad. David sends messengers to the people of Yavesh Gilad. And that's quite a distance. Hebron, all the way out to Yavesh Gilad. That is quite a distance. Sends them out. Vayomer alehem, and sends them with the following message. Bruchim atem la'ashem. Blessed are you to God. Asher asitem ha-chesed hazeh im adonechem im Shaul v'tikberu oto. For the kindness you have bestowed upon your master Shaul, for according him burial. V'yata Yas Hashem Machem Chesed Ve'emet. May God repay you with kindness and truth. V'gam Anochi Eseitchem HaTovah Hazot. I too will give you this, will offer you this goodness. Asher Asitem HaDavar Hazeh. For that which you have done. V'ata Techezakna Yedechem. Be strong. V'yuliv Nechayel. Be warriors. Kimet Adonechem Shaul, for your master Shaul has died. Vegam Oti Mashchu Beit Yuda LeMalach Aleihem, and Beit Yuda has appointed me as king over them. That's the conversation. So on a simple level, he is offering the people of Yavesh Gilad thanks for
respectfully bearing Shaul.
For the respect for burial of Melech Yisrael. But there's a couple of phrases in this section that are challenging. Actually, let me pass this out. A couple of phrases in this section that are challenging, specifically. So Chesed V'Emet is one of the places where you see Chesed V'Emet as reference to burial. It's not the only place. You see it in a few places in Chumash and Tanakh and as well. But what's that's easy, right? Anochi Eseit Atah Yas Hashem Imachem Chesed V'Emet. May God should repay you with kindness and truth.
But the ending is the one that's...
Yeah, but what does he mean?
What refers to death, and they just... They're
no,
not
it's dead. it's a kindness. God should repay that kindness.
Okay.
Right? But the reference, but if you go read on from there. V'gam anochi ese itchem hatova hazot. I too shall give you this good, do this good for you. What is he talking about?
When they're dead, he'll bury him?
No. No. What is he talking about? What is the tova hazot that I will do for you? Doesn't spell it out.
Protect them?
Maybe. Right, maybe. But it doesn't say exactly what it is. And then he says, V'yata techezakne yindechem v'yuliv nechayel. Kimet adonechem emel ashaw. Be strong. Be courageous. Be warriors. Your master has Shaul, your king, has died. You have to be courageous. What is he referring to?
They don't have somebody to protect them.
So that's the simple context is, right, your Shaul is gone, so you have to be strong. And I'll do this good for you. So take a look at the Malbim. Says the Malbim two things, sources 1 and 2. Acha shebemida sheadam moded modedim lo. As a this reference to Chesed Emet, it says, just as God, in a manner in which a person acts, God repays them, right? Midah keneged midah, measure for measure. Bivadai yas, Hashem imachem chesed neged chesed she'asitam. God will certainly be kind to you in reference or in as repayment for the kindness you have bestowed upon Shaul. V'achar she'Hashem ishalem schar hatov, yas imachem emet. V'gam manochi, I will also do so. What does v'gam anochi mean? Hodi'am bal yifachadu ala sakana. They should not be afraid over the danger shiyagi'am al zeh bekal min haplishtim. They are particularly vulnerable at this point. Why are they particularly vulnerable at this point? Can you imagine what the plishtim are going to do the next morning? Right? When they if they knew, right? They know who did it, but if they woke up in the morning, they had gone all the way out into the battlefields of Har Gilboa. They took the body of Shaul, they took him down to Eretz Plishtim, they cut off his head, they threw the body over the wall as a symbol of disgrace to what they have done to Israel, and the next morning the body's gone. Guess what? If you are the Plishtim, right, you're the symbol, your trophy, the great battle that he accomplished after all these decades is gone. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine what they would do if they found out who was responsible? Yeah. So they've opened themselves up to a great vulnerability and danger from the reprisal of the Plishtim. So he says to them, be strong. You have to be careful. But he goes one step further. He says, V'gam anochi. Muchan asot etchem hatova azot asher ba'avuro asitem et hadavar zeh. I'm prepared to assist in this goodness for that which you have bestowed upon Shaul, namely, v'yata, next malbim, v'yata techezakna yedechem, be strong, ata ki met adonechem Shaul, now that your master Shaul has died, ve'ein mi sheyishlach ba'adchem, there's nobody to send, there's nobody to support you, there's nobody to protect you, there's nobody to help you. Tzrichim atem litchazek ba'atzmechem. My dear friends in Yavesh Gilad, be careful. If I know about it, and I'm sitting in Hebron, the plishtim are going to hear about it. So you need to be careful. U'bechol zot, he says, bal titya'ashu, don't give up. Don't despair. Lachshov she'en magen ba'adchem. Don't think there's nobody to protect you. Ki gam otim mashchu Beit Yehuda. I now have an army. Beit Yehuda has appointed me king. I have an army. V'yelechem l'misgav betzar. And I will have your back. I will come to your aid in case in times of trouble. I will send you armies, I will send you protection, I will send you weapons, I will send you whatever you need. If you need an ally, you have it here. Interesting response. Right?
Do you think it's also a way for David to get loyalty mm-hmm. from
undoubtedly. Yeah. Undoubtedly. Remember, this is at his very first act of king. is to send a message into the heartland of Malchut Yisrael, into the community that has been the most loyal community to Shaul through thick and thin, and to say to them, you're in a particularly vulnerable moment. If you need help, I'm here for you. No grudge. Right? On the contrary, think about it. In the eyes of everybody, David has been pursued by Shaul, and Shaul has been David's enemy. This is David's first public moment. And in that moment, he does two things. Number one, he praises them publicly for the courage to have buried Shaul and given him a proper kavura and paid him dignity and respect. And he offers them help in case that should turn into a potential threat for them. I have no doubt that his expectation or his hope was that it's an olive branch.
Win them over.
That, not to win them over. It's to begin to breach
the divide.
To begin to cross it. To begin to reunify the people. It's going to take years to reunify all of Israel, but to start, to hope, if at that critical moment to turn to Yavesh Gilad and to offer them an olive branch and to offer them help and support, and to acknowledge the chesed of what that they've done.
Especially that Shaul chased David so many years. He was, right. I mean, think about David. Right.
But David never resented Shaul for it, and he never treated him as the enemy, right? All of those times. But that was very private. How David reacted to Shaul was a private matter between David and his men. Mm-hmm. These are the moments where that response is very public and very much part of, okay, who is the David is going to ascend the throne? Is it the David who hears about the death of Shaul and says, oh, wonderful, let's throw a party? Or who turns to the Amalekite to have the audacity to say, I killed Shaul, and say to him, how dare you, and I'm going to kill you for it. He hears about the audacious raid of Yavesh Gilad to protect the dignity and to offer respect, a burial to Shaul, and to publicly send them a mishlachat that says, Yashar Koach for what you've done, chesed ve'emet, God should repay that kindness, and I too shall repay that kindness, and if this creates any kind of vulnerability for you, know that I have an army at my disposal, I will help you. If you just need it, call me.
He couldn't have done any more. That was unbelievable. I mean,
This is where David starts. David needs to establish the foundation of what his kingdom is going to look like. And what are the values and the principles upon which he is going to reign? And the foundational principle that's going to define David is his attitude towards others, particularly Shaul, and the concept of chesed, which is going to form the foundation of his entire malchus. You know, it's interesting. Chesed is if you think about the way in which David's story unfolds, David's story starts with chesed. It's not an accident that the phrase used here is Yas Hashem Imachem Chesed. Right? What's the phrase? Yas Hashem Imachem Chesed Ve'emet. Mm-hmm. Why?
Does that sound familiar? For David, or?
Say that again?
Is the first time we is when he comes to play the harp for David?
David, no, but earlier.
The first time where he goes to go, to agrees to
much earlier.
Goliath.
Much earlier. Where is the phrase, Yas Hashem Imachem Chesed?
Isn't that from Ruth?
That's exactly what it's from.
There we go, Ruth.
Take a look at Megillat Ruth, Perek Aleph.
Why do you say that's earlier, though?
Because Ruth is David's great 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 grandmother.
Even
so
though it's way in the back of the bride.
So, well, for it to be later would be very challenging. Perek Aleph. Right from the very beginning, when Ruth.
Okay, I got it. It's
863.
Vatomer pasuk chet. Vatomer Naomi lishtecha lotea. Naomi says to her two daughters-in-law, Lech nashov neishal veit ima yas Hashem imachem chesed. Kasher asitem imamitim veimadi. May God repay you the kindness that you have done with the deceased. The kindness that you bestowed upon me after the death of the husbands, my husband, your husbands. Ten Hashem lechem and tzena menucha isha beit isha. And of course, Ruth refuses to leave. And if you turn later on to Perek Bet, when Ruth meets Boaz for the first time, Pasuk says, actually, the word chesed doesn't appear, although she's talking. He's talking about it. Actually, look at it in Parak Gimel.
It says, Heitaved chazdeg.
Yeah, where is it? Pasuk.
Pasuk Yod.
Also good. Vayomer brucha at la Hashem biti hitavt chazdech ha'acharon min avishon levoti lechat acharei bacharim im dal v'im ashir. And her loyalty to come to Boaz is described as even a greater chesed than her loyalty initially to Naomi and to the household. After all the kindness that Boaz bestowed upon her in the field, let's sort of go back to the Perek Bet story. But the kindness is there, the act of chesed is there, the actual word chesed I'm not seeing. Take a look in Pasuk Chaf. Perek Bet, Pasuk Chaf. Vatomer Naomi lechalata. Baruch hu Hashem, asher lo azav chazdo et hachayim et hametim. Vatomer la Naomi, karov lano ish migoaleinu. When they first meet Boaz, the recognition that this was a relative and the potential to redeem her and the field. Baruch Hashem Shalom Azav Chazdo Et HaChaim Et HaMetim. Blessed God, who has not abandoned His kindness to the living and the dead. Similarly, in Perek Gimel, Titavt Chazdech HaChavon Min HaRishon, your kindness, loyalty to the household and to Boaz is greater even than the previous Chesed, etc., etc. There's a few other references in Perek Dalid. I'm going to skip them for now. But there is certainly a theme that runs through Megillat Ruth of Chesed from beginning to end. If you look at the source, in very famous Medrash in Source 3, Chazal articulate this in a unique way. Amar Bezerah, Megillah Zu, referring to Megillat Ruth, Ein Balot Tum'ah, V'lo Tarah, V'lo Yisur, V'lo Heter. It's not a book of Halacha, it's not a book of laws, it's not a book of Tum'ah and Tarah. Lama Nichteva. What's the purpose of Megillat Ruth? Lamedcha kamaschar tov l'gomlei chesedim. Teaches us the great value of chesed. Ruth's chesed to Naomi is not only her redeeming quality, it's what allows Ruth to enter into the household of Israel, because it's exactly the characteristic that allows her to become the exception to the rule of the exclusion of Moab from Am Yisrael. The act of chesed.
They were the opposite.
Mm-hmm. And if you look at the end of Megillat Ruth, how does Megillat Ruth end? Ve'ela told that Paretz will lead at Chatzon, Chatzon will lead at Ram, Ram will lead at Aminadav, Aminadav will lead at Nachshon, Nachshon will lead at Salma, Salmon will lead at Boaz, Boaz will lead at Oved, Oved will lead at Yishai, Yishai will lead at David. We're four generations between Boaz and David. Ruth is Boaz's great 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 grandmother. Mm-hmm.
Great,
grandma.
That's four.
How many?
That's
no.
Four.
Boaz, Oved, Yishai, David.
Oh, you're right. Three.
Great, 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 great.
Great,
great grandma.
Great, great, great.
No. Great, great. Parent, grandparent, great grandparent, great, great grandparent.
But the theme with Chesed is so much that you were talking about. I keep thinking about when you say Talim, it's so perfect that would be so appropriate for David to do something like that.
Right. So come back to David. That's what defines David. And David, the role of Chesed will play a critical role in David's own Malchus. Like the very first thing he does, the very first act as king, which is extraordinary. You can't move 6 inches. The very, very first words out of his mouth as the newly appointed king of Israel is to send a message to Yavesh Gilad to acknowledge the Chesed and to offer a Chesed in response. Take a look at Perek Tet.
Can you smell that?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, where are we going?
Perek Tet.
It's 375. He hasn't said the pasuk yet.
Right from the beginning of the perek. Vayomer David. David is talking to. He's talking to is not the issue. He's referring to the children of Yonatan. Vayomer David hachi yesh od ish notar lebet Shaul. Are there any survivors of the house of Shaul? I owe a debt to Yonatan, and my debt is to extend that act of chesed to any of the surviving children, grandchildren of Shaul. And there's a servant of the house of Shaul, name is Tziva. Are there no surviving grandchildren to the house of Shaul? They say more chesed alokim, that I can extend an act of chesed. There's one surviving child of Yonatan, a cripple. Where is he? This individual's name is Mephibosheth. We'll meet him for the first time in Perek Dalet, I believe. And he comes to him. He says to him, "Are you Mephibosheth?" He says, "Yes." "Al tira, don't be afraid." He adopts him, brings him into his house, and offers him a place to live and to live out and be supported for the rest of his life. That's the chesed that he will do to the house of that he will repay to Yonatan, to the house of Shaul. David's entire being, his whole malchus, his essence, is defined by, as he sees it, these acts of chesed and loyalty that go beyond the generation of the moment.
That goes back to his oath to Yonatan when they separated.
Correct. That's David. Now, there's other parts to David's life and other aspects of his passion and his energy. And his we will deal with them when we get to them. But from the very outset, the foundation upon which David establishes his malchus is this sense of chesed and loyalty to Shaul, to the house of Shaul, to Yonatan, and to the established and to the leadership of Israel. All right, we will stop here.